global cosmetics industry is huge. It's already worth over $500 billion, and that's set to rise. The number of men now wearing makeup could be a contributing factor. For example, right now, around 5% of men in the UK are already wearing makeup regularly. One industry research company claims the market is set to reach a staggering $78.6 billion by 2023, and men represent a growing chunk of it.
Blockbuster drugs EpiPen and Viagra will now live under one roof. Pfizer is spinning off its generic drug business and combining that with Mylan. They'll create a new company with a new name based in the U.S. that'll boast revenue of around $20 billion. Pfizer is letting go of its Upjohn unit that makes former bestsellers that have lost patent protection. Those drugs include the male impotence drug Viagra and the anti-cholesterol pill Lipitor.
Beyond Meat's attempt to become the filet mignon of the meatless food trend is coming at such a high price, it's having to raise more funds on Wall Street. The alternative meat company that's seen its share price surge nearly 800% since its May IPO announced plans Monday for a secondary stock offering of more than 3 million shares. Existing shareholders had trouble swallowing the latest plan from the Wall Street darling, resulting in an after-hours stock market plunge.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's July 30th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. And here we go with another business day getting underway. We've got lots of ground to cover this morning. We are going to focus in on the T-Mobile-Sprint merger this morning. Is it good for consumers? That's the question we'll ask Brent Skorup, who's with us today from the Mercatus Center. Some experts are saying perhaps maybe it's not, and we'll talk more about that with Brent in our first segment this morning in just a few minutes. A little bit later in the program, how accessible is the city of Chicago? It's a question that is an important one for accessibility-related matters and people with issues and needs in that area. And it could also impact the economic output of the city in a way as well. A little bit later, Greg Pullman will be here. He's the Senior Vice President of Public Policy at the Chicago Lighthouse. They have a big event coming up as well that we're going to talk about at about 5:38 this morning here on The Opening Bell. So that's all coming up along with the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic through the 5 o'clock hour. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings this morning as investors await news from the Federal Reserve on interest rates. That led to mixed results on Wall Street yesterday. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell is expected to make the announcement on Wednesday. At the closing bell yesterday, the Dow was up just 28 points. The Nasdaq fell 37. The S&P closed 5 points lower this morning. As we look at the futures market, a little bit of weakness heading to the opening bell. Dow futures are off nearly a quarter of a percent, down 54 points. S&P futures off nearly a quarter of a percent. Nasdaq futures are off more than a third this morning. Around the globe, markets in Europe are generally mixed. In Germany, lower by nearly 144 points on the DAX, down more than a percent. In London, up just about 2 points, just fractionally higher. In France, off nearly a half a percent. In Asia, markets are mixed as well. The Nikkei ending the day up nearly a half a percent, up 92 points. In Hong Kong, up nearly a quarter of a percent. And in China, up nearly a third. In oil in the United States is trading at $57.45 a barrel, which is up about 58 cents. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. You heard in the news, and as we continue to follow it, the Capital One data breach. July 19th was the date of the breach. The company says it exposed information of about 100 million Americans and 6 million Canadians. The bank disclosed 140,000 Social Security numbers, 80,000 bank account numbers, and personal information from credit card applications over the last 14 years were compromised by a hacker. The FBI has arrested the person responsible. Capital One says they fixed the problem, not offering any more information on how significant the breach may have impacted all of that information and whether or not there's anything consumers need to be worried about. After nearly 8 decades of operation, GM's transmission plant in Warren, Michigan is halting production this week. It's one of 5 North American plants the automaker is shutting down as part of a restructuring deal to meet demand for trucks and SUVs. The plant employs around 200 people. Today, as we look at some of the economic reports due out, personal income and spending figures for June will be out. Economists see both metrics increasing 0.3%. The Case-Shiller Home Price Index for May is out as well today. So a few big things that could move the markets today. First, let's begin with the T-Mobile and Sprint merger. The Justice Department has finally given the okay to the Sprint-T-Mobile merger. The number three and number four mobile phone companies in the United States getting the green light from the Trump administration on Friday to merge. Let's bring in Brent Scorup this morning, a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center, to talk a little bit more about this with us this morning. Brent, good morning and welcome.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I think the question is, we look at this, we have these two companies at number three and number four. Of course, we look at the higher up the rung at Verizon and AT&T, and we have to ask the question, how is this going to impact consumers?
So this was a major merger that will have a large effect on most of us. Almost everyone has a cell phone or a smartphone plan, and going from four national carriers down to three, at least on paper, it was a tough case. It was a tough merger case, and that's why it took over a year for regulators to approve it. So, but in the U.S., wireless is a tough business, and that was essentially the company's, Sprint and T-Mobile's argument to regulators, was that going alone, Sprint was not going to make it.
As we do in many cases, we always say follow the money. Let's see what is going on here. Who does this benefit the most, this merger? These two companies, one of these two companies, or those two companies higher up on the rung?
Yeah, that remains to be seen. So Sprint, again, what they point out to regulators is that this is a competitive market. The revenue per user that carriers have, which is what economists look at in this market, has been declining about 20% in the last few years. Prices have been falling, but Sprint was still about $40 billion in debt, and according to the companies, couldn't climb out. So, and regulators were reluctant to approve it, because when you have fewer companies, there's fewer opportunities, there's fewer competitors to lower prices and bring new services. What the DOJ decided to do is, at least on paper, keep four companies. So, as a condition of the deal, Sprint and T-Mobile have to sell much of Sprint's assets to Dish, the satellite TV company, and now Dish in the next few years will get involved in the wireless market, although they'll be much smaller than Sprint was.
Yeah, and that's going to be part of the deal that we'll have to watch going forward to see if that works out. I know Dish has plans for that. One of the things that you've also been watching that is part of what you have been writing about and commenting on recently, your expertise is this 5G, the deployment of 5G networks. Talk to us a little bit about how this might impact that, or will impact the final deployment of 5G in America.
5G is the latest wireless technology. So about every 10 years, cell phone companies and chip manufacturers all around the world get together and to take advantage of new technology. And 5G is the fifth generation of services. So it'll be faster speeds and more services. But there's a big difference with 5G in that operators are building what's called small cells. And traditional cell phone networks, you have 200-foot towers out in fields or out on top of buildings. With 5G, you'll have many more of these small cells, which will be on light poles and on utility poles all around suburban areas. This is a lot of capital investment, as you can imagine, tearing up streets, installing millions of these all around the country, as opposed to the tens of thousands of traditional cell phone towers. And so with 5G, It's a tremendous amount of capital investment. Sprint, according to the companies, was not up, was not financially able to do this at a nationwide scale. And so to keep America's leadership in wireless technologies, and America leads the world in app development and app services, these companies felt they had to merge so that they could compete with Verizon, AT&T, who are much larger than Sprint and T-Mobile.
Brent, back to our conversation. I know this Justice Department decision is on one side of it, but on the other side are still the lawsuits from a number of states, 13 attorneys general, I believe, in the District of Columbia, still suing to block the merger. Is there a chance still that this will not happen?
Yeah, this isn't over yet. So first, the DOJ has come to an agreement with the companies to approve it with various conditions, including they can't raise prices over the next 3 years. For many state attorneys general, like you mentioned, I think there's about 13. They still believe this deal is anti-competitive, and states can act independently of the federal government, and so they plan to litigate this merger and stop it. A judge still has to approve what the Department of Justice has done here, and then there's this pending lawsuit from the states that will also need to be completed, and we'll see. It's kind of novel for this many states to disagree with a merger agreement like this. I mean, likely the DOJ agreement will receive a lot of deference from a judge, but you never know. So it's not over yet.
Yeah, and I know you watch very closely the FCC and how they're involved in this. Talk to us a little about the FCC's involvement in this approval or this deal, this merger. Did they handle this well, and what would you have to say about their dealings in this?
Yeah, in the U.S., the Federal Communications Commission has parallel, concurrent jurisdiction over wireless mergers because the FCC regulates telephone lines and wireless spectrum. So the companies also needed approval from the FCC. The FCC, it's kind of unusual for the FCC. It usually takes the longest to evaluate mergers like this, but they approved the merger a few months ago before the Department of Justice did. In my view, that's great when regulators can move fairly quickly on big deals like this, for or against. It does no one any good, consumers or companies, any good to be stuck in regulatory limbo or merger limbo, which unfortunately happens too often.
You know, Brent, I'm kind of scratching my head, too, about some of the politics involved here, if you want to talk a little bit about that. We saw the AT&T Time Warner merger be caught up by the Justice Department. They sued to block that. The Trump Justice Department sued to block that merger. How is this different? I mean, are there any parallels to draw between these two mergers and how they were treated by the Justice Department?
Yeah, it seems this is somewhat of a new era in merger policy. I mean, generally, what's called a horizontal merger, a merger of peers like Sprint and T-Mobile, receives a lot more scrutiny than a vertical merger like the AT&T Time Warner case, which was a distributor merging with a content company. So, and part of that was, again, I think the companies here, Sprint, T-Mobile, made a convincing case to regulators that Sprint just could not survive on its own. Sprint hasn't had a full year net profit since 2006, and it's a tough industry. So I think that was the difference. This failing firm theory that Sprint couldn't go it alone, and you also had Dish is kind of the black horse in this story. It's acquired a lot of spectrum, wireless spectrum, over the past 10 years or so, but hasn't deployed cell phone network yet. And with this deal, with Sprint having to sell 9 million subscribers to Dish, Dish might now finally have the critical mass to start offering a nationwide, or at least a large regional cell phone network. So all things seem to come together for the companies. The merger was on the rocks a few weeks ago, but with the entry of Dish, who had opposed the merger until these conditions were required, at least in the minds of the DOJ, it keeps four providers in the U.S. market and allows Sprint to merge with a stronger company like T-Mobile.
Yeah. There was a report just before this decision that T-Mobile suddenly became a big customer at Trump's hotels and spent a lot of money there. Is that something that should be examined a little bit closer, or are we thinking something nefarious may have been going on with that?
Yeah, I've seen those stories. Frankly, I haven't followed that closely, but certainly, if anything untoward, you'd hope there'd be an investigation into. I haven't followed that all that closely.
All right, Brent, we appreciate you being on this morning, sharing your expertise with us as always. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me, Steve.
Brent Skorup, senior research fellow at Mercatus Center, George Mason University, he covers a lot of different areas there, an expert in telecommunications, transportation, technology, regulation, and wireless policy. We appreciate Brent being with us today. Of course, you can find more about him and Mercatus at Mercatus.org.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here on our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. Of course, to make a city run well, people have to be able to get from point A to point B on time and safely. And Mayor Lori Lightfoot wants Chicago to be the most accessible city in the nation. She announced an initiative to do just that on Friday at the Chicago Lighthouse, an organization that serves communities of blind, visually impaired, and disabled persons. Greg Pullman is Senior Vice President of Public Policy at the Chicago Lighthouse and is with us this morning on the program to talk a little bit more about this and a special event that's coming up at the Chicago Lighthouse. Greg, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Yeah, good morning, Steve. How are you this morning?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you?
Quite well, thank you.
Good. Well, this is a good story. This is an important story. Talk to us a little bit about Mayor Lightfoot's visit to the Chicago Lighthouse last week and this initiative. What is that specifically she wants to do?
This is a very exciting initiative because the blind community has been very involved in advocating for accessible pedestrian signals throughout the city for a number of years. And because of some money that the city received from the federal government, they're able to move forward on installing at least 50 of these accessible pedestrian signals at various locations. One of the things that was very important in this whole process is that the Mayor's Office for People with Disabilities, the Chicago Department of Transportation, involved the blind community in choosing the different locations. There were blind consumers, advocates such as the Chicago Lighthouse, deafblind community, other individuals who are blind or visually impaired involved in this process. So we had to prioritize intersections given the limited amount of funds. So that was the city got together with advocates and made this happen. Many of the locations are near transit, agencies for the blind, medical centers, recreational areas. So this is very important that it gives people who are blind another tool to traverse the city more independently.
Yeah, give us a sense, too, about how these work. The traffic signals you're talking about have audible beeps and vibrations. Tell us about how that helps people with vision difficulties get across the street.
The environment has changed so much over the past number of years, especially with more quiet cars, lots of external noises and stuff. So a lot of the cues that people who are blind or visually impaired would use to cross the street are drowned out by white noise. So these traffic signals will be very helpful, especially in locations such as, let's say, where the L goes down Wabash Avenue, six corners, lights that do not always have the same pattern throughout the day because of, you know, there may not no longer be right-hand turns, left-hand turns, or whatever. So this would give a sense of safety and more security for someone to cross by hearing the either the tone saying, you know, that it's time to cross Roosevelt Road, for an example. Or if you're deaf-blind, there is vibrotactic so that the individual can put their thumb on a button and it will indicate that it is safe to cross the street.
Yeah, and they call these accessible pedestrian signals, and I know there have been there's some of them in the city now, but the mayor wants 100 of them in the next 2 years.
Yes, one of the things that part of this initiative that's really gratifying is that when new infrastructure is put in or construction, these lights will be part of the plan to put these in when they change, you know, stoplights, etc. So I think this is very important because it just makes the city more inclusive to all communities.
Yeah, and so I'm looking at the list of some of the intersections here, especially there on Ashland, from all the way from Harrison to Washington. Ashland is a pretty dangerous street, regardless of the condition of it. And I don't know if that's one of the ones that I cross every once in a while, and it's I can tell you it's one that I don't relish crossing. So they're looking at some of these. And let's see, 57th and Stony Island is one of them. At 69th Street, there's one. Roosevelt Road, mm-hmm. Wood, Loomis, Blue Island, Morgan, Hyde Park Boulevard at 57th Street. These are busy intersections.
Yes, and like I said, this will give a person who's blind or visually impaired or deaf-blind a better opportunity to know when the light changes. Because prior to this, like I mentioned, people would use the cues of cars, and a lot of cars are quiet. And so by the time you hear the signal, you know, that you can go, you may have lost, you know, 10-20 seconds, and as you said, these streets are wide, they're very busy, and this will give us a opportunity to cross safely like everyone else.
I bet, Greg, you're hoping that this is going to be the first of many different initiatives. There are a lot of different issues facing the accessible community, right, where you need things, not just this, but better sidewalks, those kinds of things. What are the plans for helping do some of that work?
I think the city is very engaged with this. I know the Mayor's Office for People with Disabilities and the Chicago Department of Transportation has a pedestrian access committee, which I sit on, and we look at various issues throughout the city to make the city a more livable and walkable city. One of the issues that I know a lot of the blind community is involved in right now is indoor navigation using electronics to help guide someone through an airport or through a shopping mall or some public building that's quite large, and using there are some cities that are using indoor navigation to assist people who are blind or visually impaired through their smartphones, where it will tell you what you're passing, how many yards you are from a particular gate at an airport, and so forth. So I think this is one initiative that the blind community is advocating for, and it will become part of the regular construction of buildings or renovations of infrastructures. As you know, so many millennials right now use their phones to navigate. It'll even help. Many of these things that accessibility issues are helpful to the general population. A prime example is like curb cuts, where it benefits people who are seniors and mothers and fathers with strollers, etc. So it's not only a disability issue, it's also a community issue.
Greg, while we have you on this morning, we want to talk about one of the big events for the Chicago Lighthouse coming up September 14th. Talk to us a little bit about Center Stage for Access and Inclusion.
This is a very exciting event. As we were talking about inclusion and community inclusion, this is the way the Lighthouse is going to celebrate inclusion by having an event called Center Stage on September 14th between 11 a.m. and 2 o'clock p.m. at Navy Pier, right adjacent to the Ferris wheel. And what this event's going to do, it's going to highlight a diverse group of artists, both with disabilities and without disabilities, on stage. There will be music, there will be bands, there will be disabled comedians, poetry readings, storytelling. So it's pretty exciting to show a diverse group of talent and to a very large audience to show that there is diversity within a community. So this is very exciting, I think, for the people who attend it and also to promote inclusion within the community. There are sponsorship opportunities for this event if people want to showcase their business, their not-for-profit agency, and et cetera. People can find out more about that on our website, chicagolighthouse.org, or contact Angela D'Angelo at 312-447-3246. And I think this is a way to showcase, if you're a business or a not-for-profit, that you sponsor and support inclusion of all communities.
There, I know you're going to have a number of different guests, but I saw one of the headliners, if you will, is this 7-year-old who is visually impaired, plays the piano, was on the Today Show recently.
Mm-hmm. It's very exciting that he is able to join us for the event, and he's a very talented young man and should give the audience of great boost and encouragement that people of all types can integrate within the community. So I think it's really exciting to showcase him and other artists. We have a very talented blind comic that's going to be on stage, to name another. So this is, like I said, an event, and if people want to sponsor and show that they support the group, they can contact, Angela D'Angelo at the Lighthouse.
All right, very good. And so again, September 14th at Navy Pier, Center Stage for Access and Inclusion. Greg, thank you for being with us this morning. We appreciate it.
Nice talking with you, Steve, and you have a good day.
All right, you too. Greg Pullman, Senior Vice President and Senior Vice President of Public Policy at the Chicago Lighthouse. You can find more online, and again, more about this event as well at chicagolighthouse.org.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN, Associated Bank Market Desk futures are pointing toward an opening losses on Wall Street, down 59 points on the Dow, nearly a quarter of a percent. S&P futures are down by about a quarter of a percent. NASDAQ futures off by more than a third. Let's get an update now on agriculture and commodities. And with that, here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, for the second or third or fourth week in a row, those weekly crop bulletins issued on Monday afternoon showed very little change in the condition of the crop. The USDA raised the good to excellent rating for corn by just one percentage point to 58%. Soybeans were unchanged at 54% in good to excellent condition. And spring wheat did decline 3 percentage points to 73%, coming in below expectations. One other note for livestock producers, Beyond Meat beat second quarter revenue estimates and raised its full-year forecast yesterday as the company's plant-based burgers and sausages saw booming demand. Company said it expects net revenue to rise over 170% in 2019. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of more stories before we leave you this morning. Parents are feeling pressure to spend more than they want to when it comes to back-to-school items. According to a new report from Bankrate.com, 43% of parents have felt pressured to overspend. The report finds that millennial parents ages 23 to 38 are the most likely to have felt the squeeze to overspend, compared to 39% for older parents. Experts recommend identifying shoppers' spending triggers and to be sure to set limits. Kellogg's is launching a new cereal inspired by the Baby Shark song. Baby Shark cereal will soon hit shelves exclusively at Walmart and Sam's Club. Beginning August 17th, fans can get their hands on the cereal at Sam's Club. It'll be sold at Walmart in late September. The cereal consists of berry-flavored loops with marshmallows and will sell for $5.98 a box. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Tuesday, July 30th. Personal income and spending figures for June lead off the reports today. Economists expect to see both metrics increasing by nearly 0.3%. The Case-Shiller Home Price Index for May also out today. Housing industry analyst calling for a gain of 1.7%. Pending home sales for June also out today. The experts forecast an increase of 0.7%. Also today, consumer confidence numbers. We'll also see the beginning of the FOMC meeting, the Federal Open Market Committee meeting, the Federal Reserve decision on interest rates coming tomorrow. And it's a busy day for earnings. Apple, Allstate, Grubhub, Sprint, Mondelez International, R.R. Donnelley, Under Armour, and Procter & Gamble all reporting quarterly earnings today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Tuesday, July the 30th.